Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee for today. And this April 4th, it is. And the first item of business on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems it's been a long time since we've been here, but I will approve the move the approval of the March 26th minutes.
Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. We have four bills on the agenda. Representative Cagle, you are first up. Pavement life cycle cost analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 4078 be laid over. And what House File 4078 is another life cycle cost analysis when it comes to pavement. And so what we're just doing is making sure that we're doing a life cycle analysis for all substrates, products, cement, asphalt, all that stuff, comparing it and just trying to make the best choice possible when it comes to how we're building our roads and infrastructure. And so with that, I can turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Dan LeBeau. I'm the executive director with the Concrete Paving Association of Minnesota. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. As I said, I'm a member of the executive director of the Concrete Paving Association of Minnesota, which represents contractors and material suppliers that produce and install the vast majority of concrete pavements in Minnesota. I'm here today in support of House File 4078, which updates the life cycle cost analysis statute, which guides MnDOT in its pavement selection process. Essentially, life cycle cost analysis is an economic analysis that considers many factors, including the costs over the entire life of the road, not just what it costs to build it on the front end. So with that, the legislation in front of you is an update to that statute. A little history on the statute. In 2009, the legislature passed the current LCCA law. The language was very general and did not specify how it was to be done or what factors were to be taken into consideration. Then in 2014, 10 years ago, the Office of the Legislative Auditor conducted an audit of the LCCA implementation, and the OLA recommended a number of improvements to the statute. In 2022, this legislation was introduced with the intent of incorporating virtually every recommendation Legislative Auditor made in the 2014 law. So this updating is designed to fully account for all costs at the time of construction and throughout the life cycle of the roadway. In 2022, this legislation was agreed to by the conference committee co-chaired by Chair Hornstein and Senate Transportation Committee Chair Senator Newman. However, the session ended without a transportation bill being sent to the governor. This year, we are trying again with the hope that this legislation ultimately gets to the governor's desk. In conclusion, we appreciate the bipartisan support that we've received in our visits with committee members and want to thank Representative Cagle and Chair Hornstein for their hearing today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have a question for the testifier.
Yes.
How does the current bill and some of the compromise discussions that you're having with the Asphalt Pavement Association differ from what Chair Newman and I discussed a couple of years ago?
Okay. Originally, I think the main point of contention on the bill relates to excess fuel consumption. So the bill actually requires MnDOT to conduct a life cycle cost analysis and incorporate in these user costs, because in different pavement types they can get different fuel economy, which, as we've mentioned before to Chair Newman, former Chair Newman, and yourself, is essentially what it does is, you know, different pavements get different fuel economy, and so essentially that has an economic variable that should be included. And the FHWA and their guidance specifically calls out to account for significant user costs, and on the high volume roadways in the state that it does become significant. And really what it ends up doing is, you know, we can actually, by taking that into account, we can potentially save fuel and also save cost to the traveling public. You know, as we've mentioned, it's essentially a tax on the users of the roadway by any of that excess fuel.
I hope that provision will remain in the bill. Okay, that's Anything else you'd like to add?
I think the only thing I'd like to add is I think generally speaking there's a lot of bipartisan support for this. A lot of it's good economic practice that's being incorporated. I hope everybody had a chance over the last couple of years to read that OLA report from 2014 because it was very thorough and it recommended a lot of changes. And further with that, it's, you know, MnDOT obviously has had some changes over the years, and I think it just kind of got forgotten about, and it's a good time to bring these changes and make sure we're doing an economic analysis to benefit all the taxpayers.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we have Abby Brydick from the Asphalt Pavement Association.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Abby Brydick, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. Thank you for giving me some time this morning. As the earlier testifier said, you know, we've been working on this for a couple years. There is a pretty big bone of contention, however, in the language that when we worked with the concrete industry, they agreed to remove. And that is the section on the excess fuel consumption, which sounds like it's a good strategy, but to be honest, this language has come from the concrete industry. It's not agreed upon science yet, and so we don't consider this bill pavement neutral. Our challenge is that we haven't figured out a way that we've agreed upon to study this or to study how greenhouse gases will be emitted throughout the life of the pavement. There is a lot of federal money right now that is available. An option would be to put together a pooled fund study that would include, you know, the U, MnDOT, industry, to find a way that we all agree that these things can be measured. But at this time, we don't have that science, so we couldn't fairly measure that. Another thing I visited with Representative Kraft on this bill is an LCCA bill, and an LCCA is meant to identify the cost of a project to the department. A measurement like excess fuel consumption is not a cost to the department, but it's a cost, potential cost to the road user, first of all. And second of all, it's a greenhouse gas measure, which belongs in another interesting review called an LCA, life cycle assessment. Very similar, but they're different. So if we were to do this kind of a study, it should go in an LCA-related statute, not an LCCA-related statute. I think, you know, there's also language about measuring greenhouse gases. Again, I don't know how MnDOT would do that yet. We're learning a lot about how to measure environmental impacts with the Green Procurement Task Force that's happening right now. These discussions are moving forward. While there are some things I think might help with communication and transparency with the department in this bill, I don't think it's ready for passage, and there isn't in its current form. Understanding greenhouse gas impacts for us is important, but it's a relatively new science that we all need to work together on figuring out. Thank you.
Thank you. Finally, we have Kurt Turgeon from MnDOT. Oh, you have the commissioner. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Welcome to the committee. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Dobenberger, and honored to serve as the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 4078 and provide comments. We have previously shared concerns with the proposed changes to the pavement life cycle cost analysis and welcome the opportunity to do so again. MnDOT's life cycle cost analysis was developed over many years using experience gained from past methods and the review of other state departments of transportation practices. The Federal Highway Administration guidance and academic papers, along with input from industry stakeholders, has been used to develop that process as well. The current process, based on substantial research and stakeholder input, allows MnDOT districts discretion to use an alternate bid process and select pavement types based on factors like constructability, type continuity, traffic control issues, and effects on businesses. Prioritizing long-term fixes could negatively impact local roads with lower traffic volumes. Requiring a long-term solution on all projects could mean that local roads with lower traffic volumes fall further into disrepair as short-term repaving projects are scrapped for longer-term fixes. As we've previously noted, our recommendation is to direct the department to work with stakeholders to study issues related to pavement selection, especially related to using the excess fuel consumption calculation, and report back to the legislature with consensus recommendations for changes to the process. Thank you for the opportunity to share MnDOT's concern with House File 4078 and my colleague Kurt Turgeon, our materials engineer, and myself stand for questions.
Questions for MnDOT? I thought you'd have one.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm just want to clear. So you're recommending not approving this bill. Is that correct? Is that your premise?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes, that's correct. Our recommendation is to continue to work with industry on these items of concern and further develop our life cycle cost analysis process.
Could I just throw in some data on that? We have, based on, again, I'm Kurt Turgeon. I'm currently the Director of Office of Materials and Road Research. We are currently issuing an annual report on life cycle cost analysis to the legislature. We have been doing that for the last 6 years. I did a quick review of those, and over those years, we've done 199 LCCAs. Of those, about 190 are very clear cut, have a very clear winner. So as much as this appears to be adding precision to something, the results are very clear in the vast majority of the cases. The one thing where I think we can do better as an agency is when they are going to be close. We often will know that before we start, that we do those earlier in the process, and then we get that information out to both industries. When the result is close, that 1 out of 20 times, this is not the final answer, we do then go beyond the LCCA to pick the ultimate fix. So this is a piece of information. It is a way to compare two different or three different options. And when those options come in close, then we start looking at other things. But if the economics are show a very clear winner, which they do 19 out of 20 times, we go with that option.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, what are we doing with the amendment? And can I ask the department on their concerns about the amendment?
My understanding is we're not taking up the amendment today, and this bill is being laid over.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That was the question, because I saw that we had amendment dealing with some of the issues that you had as well, and so I was just curious about that piece. We'll talk about that some other time, I'm guessing. I'll leave my comments still when we get to the final bill, unless that's where we're at now.
Yes. There's work to be done on this, and so it's unclear.
Well,
then Petersburg, what we'll do in markup.
Well, thank you. Then if for final comments, Mr. Chair, I would just say it doesn't appear like we have an agreement on the two parties that are really in competition with each other here. And so it seems like there is still some work to do. And so I think laying it over is probably a prudent
plan. Oh, yeah. The plan is to lay it over. Yeah. I don't know if that was the motion, but I think it was the motion. That is the situation. It's an important issue. It deserves an annual hearing. if we can figure this out, all the better. But I agree with Representative Petersburg's assessment. Yes, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I get tired sometimes of hearing and talking about and mandating all these reports and then not seeing, you know, the benefits of it. Or in many cases, we're seeing things that the department's already doing, just we want someone to write it out. We want someone to look at it, type it all up into a really long document that many legislators don't actually read. In a previous committee, we had a report that was 18 pages and cost $50,000 and provided us with nothing. Literally nothing. I could have stood at a dartboard and thrown a dart at it, and it would have gotten closer to a cost analysis than what this report actually did. It cost something like $3,300 per page for nothing. So my question to the department is, looking at this bill, taking out maybe the cost analysis for the fuel usage, how much of this is already potentially being done? You're looking at it. You told us that you're looking at the costs of what it takes to build a good road, to make it as long as possible. I have concerns that sometimes, in some instances, our district engineers are choosing to go for more miles than life of miles. I do have serious concerns about that. But as you're going through this, give me a percentage. Are we doing, without the fuel consumption aspect of this study, are we doing 75% of this already, just not typing it up? Where are we at?
Well, there, Mr. Chair, Representative, there are some details in here that basically, I don't know that they add value, in my opinion. Again, we're making a comparison. So if you add costs to both sides, and the comparison probably isn't going to change 19 out of 20 times. And that 1 out of 20 times, if we add some of these things, some of these what I would prefer to call minor details, if you add those things in, that 1 out of 20 times will still come out close, and we will still relook at that and say, okay, we have a close race here. These are two very close competitive options. What other things should we be thinking about? So adding these things doesn't change the process, and it probably, in my opinion, probably would never change the outcome. And that's what we're trying to get to, is the least amount of effort to the right outcome. So adding these details just wouldn't change the outcome.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony. And Representative Cagle, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know how I love analogies. And so I had gone through the performance measures and the life cycle analysis reports that MnDOT did put out. And I think it's exactly what Representative Olson said, is that we're looking at miles versus how do we, instead of our return on the investment. And so that's really, you know, what I've been kind of hounding this for a while about the return on investment, but I just keep thinking about, like, you know, a neighborhood gets hit by hail, and then the roofers go and do like one shingle at a time on each house so that they can spread it out. And it just, you know, I want to see these projects fixed. I want to see our trunk highways, and this only applies to trunk highways. I want to make sure that they're built right the first time and that we're not coming back in 10 years and patching it. You know, we've seen what happens. I don't know how many people take Pennsylvania Avenue to get out of here, but last year that road was atrocious. We're lucky we don't have the pothole season we had last year, but I really think that this is important, that we start looking at the holistic impacts of these decisions and making sure that we do a fix it. We're looking at the materials and fixing it first the right way so that we can do more projects down the road because we're saving money on those constant fixes. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will renew my motion that House File 4078 be laid over. And I promise I will continue working on this. And we've had really good discussions with both, with pretty much all the players. So I think we will be able to get to a place where we will have, hopefully, consensus. So.
I wish you luck.
Thank you.
and with that, this bill is laid over. House File 4078 is laid over. Representative Brand is occupied in another committee now. So we will hear 4872 when he returns. So we'll now revert to House File 4627, Representative Sensenmiro. Okay. Okay. Welcome to the committee, Representative Spencer Mira. And the, we are just hearing this bill. We are not taking official action, but wanted to make sure that this issue is raised and would ask you to proceed with your testimony. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thank you, committee members. So I think most of us would remember that earlier this session, we had a very powerful hearing about the work that MnDOT is doing on Rethinking 94. We heard really powerful testimony from community members who talked about the harmful impacts that highways have had on various communities throughout the Twin Cities, throughout our state. And in relation to that, community members, a coalition of organizations, has come together to propose a potential solution, a tool that MnDOT could have in their toolbox to ensure that we are building differently, that we are building our streets, our highways differently moving forward. And I think especially to ensure that we are not thinking about individual highway projects in a vacuum. We are thinking about the communities that, highway projects are in and the cumulative, the total impacts of any highway project on the existing pollution, the existing environment that is there. So this bill attempts to build off of some of the powerful work done last year with the cumulative impacts bill, specifically trying to establish a similar process for trunk highway projects that are in environmental justice areas. This bill today, this informational hearing, is the start of a conversation, you know, and I look forward to more conversations with stakeholders with MnDOT to ensure that we could create a process that I think everyone can agree is helpful and is filling a need, giving us information that we don't currently have when we are doing highway projects. I am wondering if Mr. Burris might be able to do a quick walkthrough of the bill, and then I would love to turn it over to some testifiers to share more.
Yeah, a quick walk.
Mr. Chair, members, so House File 4627 lays out requirements for MnDOT to perform transportation cumulative impacts analysis on some projects. Section 1 of the bill sets a coordination element. Broadly, the approach that is directed for MnDOT to undertake in performing the analysis ties to requirements that are set for PCA, and they're in the process of putting together administrative rules on something that's fairly parallel on cumulative impacts prior to issuance of site permits. And the coordination requirement in Section 1 relates to those administrative rules tying to the process that MnDOT is directed to put together. Section 2 lays out the core analysis. The key to this is somewhat parallel to the transportation greenhouse gas emissions provision that was enacted by the legislature last year. It's kind of a similar layout where the department is directed in some cases to perform an analysis and only add projects to the state work plan, and similarly to transportation improvement programs developed by metropolitan planning organizations. If the results of the analysis identify that there are substantial environmental or health impacts to environmental justice areas, broadly, the requirements lay out the direction to perform the analysis and then a series of elements that MnDOT needs to put together in the course of setting up the analysis. And that direction is around benchmarks, how the analysis performed, the conditions and criteria, procedures for submission of petitions that can trigger the analysis. There's some requirements on the public meeting process, and then there's a mechanism for community benefit agreements when there are harms identified or substantial adverse impacts identified, and that would be an agreement between MnDOT and a local unit of government where that has jurisdiction in the environmental justice area. And then there are mitigation actions that are authorized that hook to the greenhouse gas emissions provisions from last year. So it's sort of a build on with similar mitigation actions that can potentially be performed as an offset, more or less, to the environmental adverse impacts that are identified.
Thank you. Any other comments you have, Representative Sensenmura?
No, I would like to now bring up my testifiers.
Okay. David Mulla, Sandy Hunter, Crystal Allen Carr. And if the testifiers could keep it relatively brief, a couple minutes, that would be good.
Mr. Chair, while they're talking, can I just ask a quick question? Would this then usurp or replace all the other project selection processes we have, such as Corridors of Commerce? And Mr. Burris maybe know that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, I would describe it as another element in the project development process where an analysis would need to be performed as part of the project development. Additionally.
Please state your name for the record, and again, if you could keep your testimony to about 2 minutes, that would be helpful.
Representative Hornstein, thank you for your attention to this important bill, which seeks to address cumulative impacts of trunk highway projects like the Rethinking Rondo, the Highway 94-252 expansion. I live in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, two blocks from Highway 252, and I've been involved with my wife and several other people in our community in opposing MnDOT's plans to expand I-94 by adding two lanes in each direction to what is already a 8-to-10 lane freeway, and also to oppose converting the either 6-lane or 4-lane expressway, Highway 252, into a 6-lane or 6-lane freeway or a 4-lane freeway. And our opposition is based on the fact that converting these areas to freeways, expanding the freeways, will double the traffic going through BIPOC communities that have, you know, around 60% minority populations, which are highly vulnerable to air pollution. And doubling the traffic and creating a truck route where diesel trucks will travel at maybe thousands of trucks a day, whereas nowadays there are only like 100 heavy diesel trucks a day, will greatly expand the soot, the ozone, the nitrous oxides, and other toxic chemicals that are being emitted into the air and being breathed by the people that live and work and play in the areas near that highway.
Thank
and,
you very much.
Yeah, so we're very much opposed to, you know, this expansion, and think cumulative impacts is very much needed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sandy Hunter, and again, we're between 2 minutes, and then we'll have Crystal Allen Carr and Commissioner Daubenberger.
I just wanted to say, first of all, to Chair Hornstein, I was here once before telling you about my cancer that I have, stage 4. I just found out a year plus ago. And I come from a long-lived family, no cancer, no dementia. I'm extremely healthy. I have no other health problems. And here I have stage 4 cancer. I live across the street. The I-94 runs right behind the houses across the street. And I've lived within half mile at the most for 52 years. So Chair Hornstein, at the last meeting, you said a statement of empathy when I left, and I was so surprised and touched. I didn't acknowledge that. And so I want to say that kindness is the social glue we all need, and I really appreciated that. But I've listened to this discussion of cement and this and that, and I think, but people are being harmed by this freeway. And I think, what would happen if we made it the whole thing a tunnel so people could choose to use it if they want to get to Walmart a few minutes earlier or whatever? And they're the ones who suffer the consequences. We'd have good filters and everything, but still it would all be contained. There would be the biggest hue and cry about that and lawsuits left and right, like, you can't do this to us. But the cars that go by where I live and taint the whole atmosphere for other people, and it's tainting it for you. I-94 is just down the hill from you. You're breathing that, too. So I just think it's so screwy. We've lost the big picture for all the little teeny pieces of it. And years ago, I decided I would form a free service called Little People Incorporated, and I would try to help people who had a problem with their landlord not doing things and code violations or a problem with a business. But this is, we're all Little People Incorporated. But this was too big of a problem for me. It's for you, and you can help with this. Okay, but I just please look at other countries because they're so far ahead of us. People don't own cars there, and they don't need them because they have options.
Thank you so much.
I just wanted to say that. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, and thank you again for your testimony. Finally, we have Crystal D'Alencar.
Hi all, thank you. My name is Crystal D'Alencar, and I work with the Minnesota Environmental Justice Table, and I'm here to lend our unwavering support for the Cumulative Impacts Bill for Transportation. This bill is a pivotal step towards rectifying deeply entrenched injustices that have plagued our transportation system for decades all over the country. For far too long, urban highways have been emblematic of systemic racism and classism in our society. Whether intentionally or by negligence, construction and expansion have systemically torn through environmental justice communities, tearing apart neighborhoods predominantly inhabited by low-income, working class, or black and brown people. This legacy of discriminatory transportation planning persists today, perpetuating a historical cycle of harm. My current work with the MNEJ table is to shut down the HERC trash burner downtown that is also a product of racist and classist planning and allowed to exist due to inadequate policy and regulations. Regulations and permits that are typically decades behind the research and science and take precautionary and preventative measures last into account. In fact, by today's standards, nitrogen oxide standards, the HERC could not be built. Environmental justice embodies the fundamental principle that every individual, regardless of race or socioeconomic status, has the right to live in a clean and healthy environment. Yet the reality is starkly different. Our frontline communities bear the brunt of the detrimental health impacts inflicted by highways. The toll of these injustices cannot be overstated as they reverberate through generations, undermining the well-being and prosperity of entire communities. The passage of the Cumulative Impacts Law for Highways signifies our collective commitment to prioritizing public health, environmental justice, and racial and class equity in transportation planning. Do not let this be yet another case where years of toxic emissions perpetuate, harmful projects get approved, only for a decade from now the policy catches up to what we've known all along, that frontline communities suffered and died due to inadequate standards. Moreover, the significance of this legislation is amplified by the recent enactment of the Cumulative Impacts Bill for permitted facilities passing only in 2023. The parallels between these bills are unmistakable as they both aim to safeguard vulnerable communities from the insidious effects of environmental degradation and systemic inequalities. In conclusion, I implore each of you to recognize the urgency of this moment and seize the opportunity to enact long overdue protections for our most vulnerable communities.
Thank you all so much. And now we have Commissioner Dobbenberger, and then we'll hear from Representative Brand on his bill. Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Again, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Nancy Dobbenberger, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on House File 4627. MnDOT appreciates the goal of the legislation and already undertakes cumulative impact analysis as part of the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. In fact, the majority of MnDOT projects have a federal nexus and require compliance with NEPA. I'd like to share some concerns MnDOT has about the legislation. The bill would require an impact analysis prior to the inclusion of a trunk highway project in the State Transportation Improvement Program, STIP. At that point, an environmental review process typically would not have begun. Projects must be fiscally constrained, which includes being included in the STIP, before the federal environmental review process can begin to comply with NEPA. An assessment of the adverse impacts and cumulative impacts prior to listing projects in the STIP would be incomplete, as the robust environmental review process required by NEPA and the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act, or MEPA, would not have been completed yet. A key component of NEPA is to not predetermine outcomes before the NEPA environmental review process is complete. It would not be possible to conduct an impact analysis without being able to identify the preferred alternative of a proposed project, which must happen as part of the NEPA process, and at about 30% design when enough details are known about an alternative in order to be analyzed. Please see the graphic or the handout that was provided that has a graphic showing alternatives and how we funnel down alternatives as we move through the process. Assessment of impacts and resulting mitigations can't happen until a preferred alternative is identified and the true impacts of a project are known. So because this legislation would require us to identify alternatives too early and discarding alternatives in the planning phase, we would be predetermining the outcomes of the environmental process. NEPA requires considering all reasonable alternatives equally before discarding. They all need to go through the process, and we need to demonstrate why an alternative needs to be taken off the table as part of that process. This could mean any project could be delayed, or we could potentially be left with no alternatives due to the NEPA process being out of compliance. So cumulative effects include more than just air quality. It includes things like water quality, noise levels, and livability effects like walking and biking. The environmental justice definition in the bill differs from the federal definition. Environmental justice per the Federal Highway Administration means identifying and addressing disproportionately high and adverse effects of the agency's programs, policies, and activities on minority populations and low-income populations to achieve an equitable distribution of benefits and burdens. So potential impacts if this bill would become law, it could put MnDOT out of compliance with the federal law, jeopardize federal funding on projects, and again, delay projects too. Federal funds make up about 55% of our state road construction program, closer to 65% now with one-time programs through IIJA. And of course, if you add the Blatnick Bridge grant that we just got, that grant is about the amount of federal core program funding we get in a year. The Corridors of Commerce program that was brought up, those projects need to go through the NEPA process, and being out of compliance with NEPA could jeopardize funding for those projects as well. So thank you again for your time and for considering our remarks, and I stand for questions.
Questions for the commissioner. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Dobenberger, good to see you here. Just a few things. When you talk about preferred alternatives or alternatives, what does that mean, like alternative routes that you're considering at that point in the process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft, when we talk about alternatives, it's different project proposals that would be considered. So it's not necessarily different routes, but for a large project, if there are realignments considered, those would be within different alternatives. But different alternatives would normally just constitute different proposals that would be considered for a project.
I have a follow-up, and Representative Kraft, you get to speak on the mic.
Sorry. Representative Norris helped me there. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner. Let's say there's a situation where there's an analysis done and you determine that there are significant cumulative impacts on the community where a proposed highway or expansion is going to go through. I understand in this legislation that would have that then there would be a requirement to make some changes and adoptions. So, and I understand your point too that it's at odds with NEPA. So let's say that happens in the time frame you're talking about, in after it's in the STIP, how do you adjust for those impacts? I'm wondering, like, I get your point. I'm wondering, is it too late at that point to adjust to those impacts or not?
Proceed, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft, thank you for that question. Yes, when a project is in the STIP, it goes through the environmental process in which we identified a preferred alternative. And I should have mentioned on your last question, one alternative that is always considered is our no-build, do-nothing alternative. So just want to be clear about that. That goes through the process as well. As we are analyzing what's starting to emerge as a preferred alternative, we look at social, economic, and environmental impacts. And as we are looking at those, and we look at those with other alternatives too, but when we're getting to a preferred, if we're assessing it and the impacts are too great, that would back us up in the process to consider other alternatives, including the no build too.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Kraft. Any other questions? Okay, well, final comments, Representative Spencer-Mira.
Thank you so much to the testifiers for sharing their stories. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, for allowing this informational hearing. You know, I think there will be lots of continued conversations. You know, what I would say is that I respect the deep process that MnDOT has, and I know that we have seen throughout history, and we have seen for some current projects that we get to the end, and then we do have significant concerns about the environmental impacts, the cumulative impacts specifically on communities of color, on low-income communities. And so I think we need all the tools in our toolbox to make sure that we are designing roads for the future that will benefit all of our communities. And so I look forward to continued discussion about this potential tool. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Spencer-Mira. And Representative Brand has joined us now. And he is is headed to the dais. I will move that House File 4872 be laid over for possible inclusion in a transportation finance omnibus bill. And just before we get into the discussion here, the reason that this bill is before us is that in the finance bill last year, for the very first time, we have a ongoing line item for small cities. This is just something that has been vexing for many, many years, probably even longer than the asphalt concrete discussion. And so, you know, what we had done previously is sort of limp along and have some general fund money here, some general fund money there. It would vary. Now we have a consistent pool. In the next biennium, 24-25, we'll have $24.3 million. In 26-27, we'll have $50 million a year going to small cities. The problem is that in this first year, you know, we need to make up some money. Mr. O'Rourke has been clear on that. Others have been clear on that. And so one of my goals in our finance bill is to figure out ways in which we can make sure that here in this first go-round, small cities can partake in some of our transportation needs. So that's the goal. So, you know, the good news, amazing amounts of money coming in shortly because of our work last year. But again, there's a gap that has to be filled in the very, very short term. And that's why we have this bill before us. So, Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing this legislation today. Last year's enactment of the 50 cent.
Oh, excuse me. Oh. Those were biennial figures that I had mentioned. Sorry.
Yep. Last year's enactment of the 50 cent retail delivery fee was intended to support the maintenance of our state's roads, with nearly 27% the proceeds dedicated to small cities assistance accounts. Unfortunately, a creative interpretation of the statute by the executive branch has pushed the enactment date of the fee from January 1st back to July 1st. This has led to a shortfall in funding from the small cities assistance account. We're talking about 700 cities in the state of Minnesota with a population of 5,000 or less for the purposes of the construction and maintenance of roads and bridges located within or at least partially within a city. Most of these cities do not have a tax base that can 100% foot their bills. I want to draw attention before I turn it over to my testifiers that there is a number of strong pieces of literature here for you to read for the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, and Minnesota Small Cities, with a list of the actual small cities across our state. I represent four of these small communities in that list of 700. And now I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers, and I'm here to answer any questions afterwards.
Thank you very much, Representative Brand. And I don't know who wants to go first. We have Bill McCabe, Jonathan Smith, and Cap O'Rourke.
Good morning. My name is Bill McCabe. I am the city administrator for the city of St. Augusta. I have been for the past 19 years and 25 years in Minnesota as a small city administrator. And the first thing I want to say is thank you for the dedicated funding. We really do appreciate it, and we're using it to plan. This year we were planning based on our conditions, our road condition survey that we do every other year. We were starting to plan and counting on that first year's money to come into the plan. Going back some years, back to the shortly after the housing bust, when all the local government aid got cut, St. Augusta's local government aid went to zero. And in the time that it's ramped back up, we're still only at about 65% of what we were getting pre-housing bust. That money was obviously used for our roads, and our road conditions have deteriorated. We weren't able in that time to do any roads, and so this dedicated funding will help us plan and get our roads back onto a schedule where the maintenance and the reconstructions are done in a timely manner. That's all I have got. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it, Chair and members.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. O'Rourke, are you next?
Mr. Chair, I believe we have someone online.
Is
Johnson Smith remote?
Okay, that would be the city manager of Purim, Mr. Jonathan Smith. Mr. Smith able to join us?
He said he was in the Zoom.
Okay, that would here he is. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, we need to get a box out of your face. But...
there it is. Okay.
But we can hear you, and we can see most of you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm going to go. I think we got good sound. Sorry for the...
Oh, and we actually can see you now.
I love traveling down to St. Paul, and, you know, I was thinking about that trip in the state highways, county highways, that obviously received that state aid and that funding on my trip down. But it's really important, those off stretches, right? You know, we've talked about that last mile. And again, that dedicated funding is extremely important. And I thank you, Mr. Chair, and other committee members that were part of that. We're super excited about that. We're excited in anticipation for that planning, as Mr. McCabe said as well. You know, looking at this year's funding, although you look through those small cities and those dollar amounts, they may not seem significant, but they're very important to us. They allow us to do again, that annual maintenance that's needed, so we don't have to go through those full reconstructs and those, you know, very costly projects, which we end up typically assessing to those property owners. So this saves on that dramatically, and we're just very appreciative, again, for that dedicated funding. We know this little snafu that happened, so we're very much in support of House File 4872. And we just hopefully you support that as well and understand the situation that we're in, and we're thankful for all the support that we've had.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for joining us remotely. And now, the main attraction, Cap O'Rourke.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We advocate on behalf of the over 700 cities with populations under 5,000. So to be clear, first of all, I do want to thank you for the efforts of last session. We were excited to get ongoing, dedicated, and growing funds for Minnesota small cities. As you recall, the money that we were getting last year was part of both the new delivery fee, and it was also going to get portion of the auto parts sales tax. Historically, this fund has always gotten one-time appropriation, to which we give the Department of Transportation. The Department of Transportation makes an assessment based on lane miles, and then they put out the per-city calculations. We get paid in July and December, along with our LGA payments, and it is a very simple process. What happened last year, because there's revenue, at some point the agency decided that they wanted to collect the revenue before they dispersed the revenue. So if you were going to pay small cities in fiscal year 24, then we should have gotten a check in July and we should have gotten a check in December. Those did not happen, and our next check is not coming until next July, which will be fiscal year 25. So there was this ongoing debate as I kept posing questions to the Department of Transportation. What the result is there's a one-year lag. So while we were supposed to, in the bill that was passed last year, get $3 million in fiscal year 24 and $19.9 million in fiscal year 25, the new calculations are we are going to get $2.5 million in fiscal year $0 in fiscal year 24 and $2.5 million in fiscal year 25. And then at some point, that revenue in the next biennium will pick up. Our cities were expecting these monies. They had started to plan for these monies. If you look at the on this sheet, the attachment is from the run is from MnDOT, and this is what cities will get with $2.5 million. The big winners in this are getting $10,000. As we all know in transportation, $10,000 doesn't buy you a whole lot of much in transportation. If we were to get the full amount in the biennium, the big winners are still only getting 90, I think there may be one city over 100,000 based on estimates. Even that, as we all know, is not going to pave your streets with gold. So the fact that we have had this huge setback is really concerning for our cities. This bill would do one-time funding. Another key component in this bill is that we put, rather than split out this fiscal year 25 appropriation into two payments, one in July and one in December, we would put this whole entire one-time appropriation into the payment of July so that the cities can use it in their calendar year 24, which is when they had been planning to use this moving forward. We thank you for your creativity and looking for a solution on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. Questions? Representative
Peterson. Well, questions of you, Mr. Chair. Understanding that you have a $2 million target, and this is a $25 million here and included, and I strongly encourage you to include whatever you can here, are there other ways in which we could find the rest of it, or are we limited to the $2 million?
We're not limited to the $2 million, and I think we have some ideas about it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
And appreciate Representative Olson's work on this issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, I probably don't have to vocally express my approval of this. I'm on the bill. So I appreciate everything we can give to the small.
I saw you and wanted to acknowledge. Okay. Any other concluding comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for hearing the bill again today. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing this as well. I think it impacts a lot of people across the entire state. And, you know, I spent 7 years on the city council before I became a state representative. A lot of that stuff was nonpartisan, bipartisan work, and I really do appreciate the feel and flavor of this legislation as well in both bodies. It's just the right thing to do, so I appreciate every last dollar we can put towards this piece of legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. So with that, members, House File 4872 is laid over.
All right.
And we have one final bill today, House File 3904. And it looks like Representative Petersburg might be able to get to his meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that you're going to be laying this bill over, so I just wanted to introduce.
Yeah, so the formal motion would be that House File 3904, Chief Author Swedzinski, be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, and I'm filling in for him. He was unable to be here today, but I have testifiers here that will talk about the mayor that actually died in Washington, D.C., promoting transportation. He's a big promoter of transportation, so I'll further ado, let the testifiers talk.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you being able to hear me this morning and the committee members. I'm Randy Maluchnik. I'm president of the Southwest Corridor Transportation Coalition. I have a letter to submit to the record, and then I want to just shorten in summary that the good mayor, Smoluski, spent over four decades advocating for Highway 212. Three of those decades I worked with him personally, first as a congressional staffer, then as an elected county commissioner. Dave traveled on Highway 212, which he thought was very inadequate, and I agreed with him, to attend meetings at least quarterly and all kinds of weather. We really appreciated that, that he was able to do that. Again, the work being done on 212 is in the metro area for the most part, and he traveled all the way from Granite Falls to do that. Speaking about his last day performing as a public official, there's no finer public servant than Dave was. That day we were on the Hill. He worked all day, walked the halls of Congress. Many of you have done that. You know what kind of effort that takes. He, after the day, as we headed down to have dinner, he was very, very encouraged by the meeting with Congresswoman Benson. He thought that went really well, and he was very happy. We were having dinner when the episode occurred, and then he was transported to the hospital, and of course then he while that hospitalization he left this world, and we miss him a great deal. So he was a friend, a mentor all those years, and I respectfully request that you support House File 3904. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for all of your work in transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Leader Seifert. I'm always going to call you Leader Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, you always make me smile, and I'm so sad to hear you're retiring. Yeah. Representative Nelson, the only people in the room who ever served with me, I think, that are around the table anymore that remember when I was in the legislature. Well, Aaron Anderson, you were our page, weren't you? Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for having me today. Marty Seifert, this was a brainchild of mine. Dave Smoluski was a constituent of mine at one time when I had Yellow Medicine County. Was appointed to the city council at the age of 26 in 1979, served over 40 years in the city government through two floods, a tornado, the loss of their largest business, lobbied tirelessly for transportation, and as Randy mentioned, died literally lobbying for transportation in Washington, D.C. He was really, I think, the epitome of a nonpartisan, bipartisan mayor, which, as we know, is the type of public servant that we all want. We do have non-state sources for this. There is no fiscal note on this bill. I know the other body is dual tracking it for a potential bill signing ceremony and putting it on the register and in the omnibus bill, but however you want to handle it, Mr. Chair, we're certainly deferential to that. Mr. Smoluski was instrumental in getting the Kilowatt Community Center built, supported the development of the ethanol plant after their elevator was destroyed in the tornado, and I think I would just sum it up that he was a very genuine guy in an increasingly disingenuous world, and always optimistic for our future. So I would ask for you to support this bill.
Okay, thank you very much for that reminiscence and your service, Representative Seifert. Representative Petersburg.
I just thank you for it, and I ask for your support, and thank you for holding this over.
Oh, Representative Brand.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to say quickly how happy I am to hear of this legislation. I signed on to it as soon as I saw it being introduced. As I said in the previous testimony that I had on the stand there, I was a city council member for 7 years, and of those 7 years, six of which I was a board member of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And I will tell you that Mr. Smigluski, former Mayor Smigluski, made a big impact on my life, and I appreciate the opportunity to honor him by signing on to this bill, and hopefully we can get this one passed as well. Everything that was said is absolutely entirely true. And more. He was just a wonderful guy, very warm, very caring. He spent a lot of time with younger members of the coalition to make sure that they understood how important the job was and how important it was for the communities. And so just wanted to say that, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Brand. Any concluding comments?
Mr. Chair, other than the support, and I appreciate you laying it over and the possible inclusion. It is a worthy memorial that I think we deserve as well. So thank you for hearing the bill.
Appreciate it. And with that, House File 3904 is laid over for possible inclusion. Okay, members, that concludes our agenda for today. We still have a number of late-breaking bills coming in that we will be hearing next week, and we'll hopefully get through our agenda next. Tuesday the 9th, and stay tuned. We may have the week after a possible evening hearing, but nothing next week.
Thursday we're off, is that right?
Correct. Thursday is we're off for Eid, so we only have one meeting next week, Tuesday, and a number of important bills on the agenda that day. So, and we'll be posted shortly. So with that, members, we are adjourned.